Since our program began last January, people have been asking me, when's Ira coming? Because he's been advertised as one of our poets, but he's only going to be teaching with us in the summers. But we're very, very grateful to have him here, and he's already made an important, become an important presence to us. And for me, I think to get to know Ira is to fall in love with him. Sorry, Jerry. For his great humor, his sly, wonderful humor, his tenderness, his empathy. Ira is one of those teachers and poets who gives everything he has to his work, every drop. There's no withholding. With his piercing intelligence, he is both challenging and devotional, meaning he questions everything, but his questioning is never simply outer-directed. He's someone who is always questioning himself at the same time. He's probing whatever crosses his path. He questions because he cares so much about everything. Ira's poetry swerves. His vision is historical, political, but also metaphysical. It's about what drives us, what pushes us into discovery. His poems are about transformation of consciousness and the many voices of the self. In a poem I love, Fox Crossing a Field, he says, "Apprentice to the pasture, I linger like music on the enchanted, the marsh grass, the unascribed." And his presence for us who are so lucky to call him teacher and colleague is like music. Ira's new book of criticism, History Matters, Contemporary Poetry on the Margins of American Culture, which we had but is already sold out but can be had, you know, without too much trouble in other ways. Boy, that didn't sound right, did it? Sorry, Ira. You know what I mean. Oh, dear. I'm just stepping in it all different ways today. Anyway, his new book, is a book of criticism, and it's brilliant and should be required reading for all of us interested in poetry. He writes, "Words are the poet's medium like paint. They are the vehicles of consciousness and always circumscribe our vision of the world." He asks us not to uncritically accept the conventions that pressurize our thinking, meaning question everything, look at everything, think about everything, start from scratch. Energetic art reflects the complexity of its age and tests it. It teaches us to be voracious, to absorb and appropriate, to argue with ourselves and our past, but also to leap off the known, to be open to possibility. I think you will see that he asks as much from his own poems. Please welcome Ira Sadoff.
God, I can't follow that. Thank you so much, Anne-Marie. I didn't know Anne-Marie was introducing me, and I'm especially touched by such kind words from not only a poet I respect a lot, but a dear friend. So I'm a little shaken by that. Nonetheless, I'm going to read my poems. Not that shaken. As a two-year-old friend of mine once said, "More me." I thought, a future poet. I'm going to start with three new poems that I've only read to Jerry so far. But they're new, so I want you to hear them. And I want to let you know, you folks who are true, that I'm very grateful to be working with you and to get to know you and to feel part of this loving community that that a lot of wonderful folks made possible. So it's good to be part of it. This one's called True Faith. True faith belongs to the truly unstable. To those enormous sunflowers that keep crows away, with their bowed heads almost touching the garden floor. The prayers of my friends, too, are passive-aggressive. They begin with, "I bet you're not listening, you bastard." Then they incant some hard-bitten phrases learned by heart after they learned to be scathing and doubt-ridden, after they heard bedridden, after the coughing fits, the scams and the accidents that sought them out. After weeks without sleep, after some clown from Beijing steals their job and expects them to be grateful for the toaster that costs 50 cents less, even though it falls apart in your hands in an instant, the way we fall apart in an instant. We hate the factories anyway. The silver filings, the heating coils, the view of the brick buildings next to ours without windows. It's okay. I spent my best years in a hamper, hiding from my mother and father. You could see through the wicker there, and here I write a sentence about banishment. The packed suitcase, the secret staircase. I bring the others inside with me. We hold our breath. It's one breath. It's the same breath. It's the hush that chaperones someone as he flies off the mountaintop with just his nylon and aluminum wings, catching the thermal. It's not human. Circling and descending until he lands tumbleweed style in a field adjacent to the vineyard of the Lord, followed by beers at the Hofbräu, where we lean into one another with joy and shout and toast one another, thinking, we could have lost this one and that one, and how quiet the earth would be, and how round. I'm not too... I have the kind of whisperer thing, you know, like... You should only read poems to one person so they love you. It's not working so far. I don't know. This is one of my few poems that originate in autobiography. When I was 17 years old with a fake ID, I used to go to the Five Spot Cafe, and I got my education there. A summer that Thelonious Monk, Sonny Rollins, and Charlie Mingus were all there for weeks at a time. And I sat at the bar for $3. I'm beginning to sound like you, Jerry, with your 25-cent scotches. I'm thinking, 25-cent scotches? No, I don't know. Okay, I'm retiring. I had the displeasure of... sitting next to Leroy Jones, who was who is now Imamu Baraka, and he was one pissed off guy, and rightfully so. So this begins with the my meeting Leroy Jones in 1961. It's called American. First time, and only time, I met Leroy. We were standing at the Five Spot Bar, summer 61. He was drunk, disgracefully so, which is why he deigned to talk to me in my white Oxford shirt and my hair fluffed up for a future Ivy League career. I hadn't yet read The Toilet or The Slave. I'd only been fucked twice by two girls from Queens with hairdos like spider legs. I hadn't yet thrown a brick through IBM's window, been gassed at Rockefeller Center. Maybe once I'd climbed the stairs to the War Resisters League, picked up an A.J. Musty pamphlet or two. I might have lived on meringue pies at the Automat, worked the register at Gristiti's. I remember most of what happened since I was 16, self-assured, sensitive in the worst way. No one had even laid a hand on me yet. But then he raised his black turtleneck to show me the swollen welts on his ribs where a cop had throttled him. And I had the gall to insist, "I'm not like that. I'm no racist." "You just want me to like you," he shrugged. Then the second set began. The next man I met, that tanked up on range, was Archie Shepp. Every riot you could think of had burned a putrid city down. For my 30th birthday, he played two shortcuts, breathy mid-range off-pitch squawks, shouted the drummer off stage, then gave us that stare, since there was no one else to look at, to look at what we'd become. This is as close to a sonnet as I'm ever going to get. So don't count your IMs. Or you'll be severely, I don't want to say. Lament. While I was gone, I lost my finches. The first lilies bloomed. The second and the third. My town lost a lamp store and light in its windows. My camellias, how pale they seem. And the grass, how impatient, acting out with its spray of weeds. Hummingbirds, I am so sorry. I fell in love a little while I was gone. I sugared a few donuts in her kitchen. Swept up when we tracked dirt in the den. I liked it best when we fumbled around in the pitch, searching for each other. In the silences, there was a great sea between us. All right, it was more like a pond. But an icy little pond. My finches, how they would dip and peck. How bright they were. The finches, how I missed them. Whew. The poems are still close to the bone. Which is what you want them to be, except you don't want them to be that. Now to some older poems. I'm not going to go to very older poems because I'm deeply ashamed of everything I've said. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. That's one of those... there's this great comic who used to imitate George Bush and say, "Oh, that's an inside word." I said it on an outside. I meant to say it inside. He never really distinguished between the two. Thank God he is gone. My mother's funeral. The rabbi doesn't say she was sly and peevish, fragile and voracious, disheveled, voiceless, and useless at the end of her very long rope. He never sat beside her like a statue while radio voices called to her from God. He doesn't say how she mumbled with her broom, staggered, swayed, and sighed afternoons till we came home from school to greet her. She never frightened him or bent to kiss him. Sponged him with a fever, never held his hand, bone white, bolted doors and shut the blinds. She never sent roaches in a letter. He never saw her fall downstairs, dead sober. He never watched her sweep and murmur. He never saw spider webs she reads as signs. Her life was over long before her frightened husband left, long before they dropped her in a box, before her children turned shyly from each other, since they never learned to pray. If I must think of her, If I can spare her moment on the earth, I'll say she was one of God's small sculptures, polished to a glaze, one the wind blew off a shelf. Anne Marie is Fox in the Field in Barter or Grazing. Do you remember? I want to read that for you. It's in Barter. Okay. I want to read that for you. It's a tiny little poem. Yeah. You don't know the page number, do you? I wasn't planning to read it, but I want to. Thank you. 21 is right. Okay. Now for the, do you want door number one, door number two? Okay. Fox crossing a field. I lived in the country in Maine in a little town called Bassleboro that wasn't a town. And I had a lawn that was so big I actually had a John Deere tractor. There's nothing that looks sillier than a Jew on a tractor. I made sure there were no photographs allowed. Fox crossing a field. I'm no Saint Francis. I can't decide who the devil is, who should live with whom, who should die happy. Apprentice to the pasture, I linger like music on the enchanted, the marsh grass, the unascribed. But in the meadow, the first fox of spring, correcting a sentence, has crossed over, spying a killdeer, God's most stupid creature. When scared, she rolls over and spreads her wings. So spindly are her legs, she should be waddling at surf's edge, not squawking in my birch grove. When I say birch grove, the light comes on. You can see in the window how calm the eye is. It's a monastery. Thank you for reminding me of that. Bud Powell, I want to read this poem because Bud Powell got the living crap knocked out of him by racist cops in Philadelphia, our nearby neighbor, and it made him mad. I'm literally mad. He was probably the most influential post-war pianist. Every pianist I love is indebted to Bud Powell for his blazing speed and his phrasing. And this is Bud Powell at the Club Montmartre, 1961. All of Paris was a hospital. Doctors stocked revolvers, smoked cigars. On the Black Keys, he made Chinese music. Stammering, swaying, mumbling, he saved his better speeches for the piano. They could not turn out the lights, so we were lit up as by Bellows or Grosch, orange and black with oval hats, a red smear of lips. In his suit of white powder, he was almost flower. I was white and 17, taking notes. Even after they dressed and made him up, even after injection of lithium, he sat at the piano, listening. His thoughts were severed limbs, sutured to a story. I may have caught a phrase, a worked-up glance or two, but Bud was a baby whose hands wandered over the left bank with pock-skinned hookers who fed him with a spoon. Likewise, I was happy to suppress the sequence of sirens, to testify to beauty before they took him back. I filed away the residue of melody, but to say I was happy misconstrues the boy who hung on every word. His palms were smoking in his pockets when he sat down next to me. Show me your hands, he said. Your ordinary hands. Okay. I want to give you a difficult one that's better read on the page because I'd like you to hear the voice of it. It's the title poem, From Grazing. Can you hear me in the back? David can hear me. I don't care about the rest of you. I got David's attention. I'm lying, but, you know, probably makes him feel a little special. I don't know. Maybe not. Don't tell me if that's not true. This is called Grazing, and it was written with a high consciousness. The speaker in this poem is very much a part of that internet MTV generation of a 7-second attention span, which, thanks to Twitter, has gotten shorter. 7 seconds is now okay. And this is kind of long. Grazing. Sometimes the rapid fire channel switching is like iMusic. Or when you annihilate an image, another, hydra-like, appears in its place. Sometimes there's nothing enticing at the malls. Or what we crave is ghostly, far away, long gone. We have a slim attention span. Torn fingernail thin. They scanned the hillside for the body. The split wood fence with barbed wire where the thrust of my desire was so diffuse, I could almost point to swamp grass and say, yes, that's what I wanted. One instant bleeding into the next. You have to imagine the music as random, dissonant, schizophrenic, playing and not playing, as if synapses had been cut and sutured back together again. Where I grew up, getting to know someone was alluring, provocative, arresting. The sheer inventory of body parts, what they indicate, how they mark a person, dissemble or embolden them. I can make this personal and lyrical. If they point the camera above and beyond the ruined individuals, where I can call the rain-slicked emerald green, and beyond that, call out from granite cliffs the twisted paths to the sea. How white her face was. How she disdained the out-of-doors for all its randomness and contagion. Her flesh, if we call it flesh, was spongy and doughy, more flexible than fungible, smudged like newly printed money. I'm trying to bring you closer. In the privacy of the hotel room, there's a piano on the radio. The shallow breathing of someone whose name I won't give you. My wrist grazing her cheek, tracing her shoulders, her hips. What does it mean now to be inside someone? To feel her hand as a glove your hand wears. To think her thoughts with and for her, where the body's incited in enactment as well as metaphor. For most of an hour, we watched them fucking in the Mirror Hotel with the windows open, where happiness seemed precise, itemized, silent, condensed. The air they were breathing, we were breathing. A certain thickness of line becomes them, where windows to the soul cannot be seen. I have the nagging suspicion that to be saved is all about money. To save up, to put on the shelf and savor until maximum value is accrued. But sometimes the music is cherubic, the kind Bach's preludes breed in a practicing child. A fat little angel espousing the cloud. We're sitting there playing a little duet, a kettle of steam, to be watched, inspected, poured over, opened up, and still receive the adjacent body without turning away or shutting down the valves of the door, opening and closing, canting and retracting as the blood rushes in. You need a pace changer, don't you think? We don't have too many more to go. Three more. But they're all epic poems that last 3 or 4 weeks. You didn't know that I wrote the Odyssey. Pillows supplied at the door. I'll read 2 more poems. This is also a newer poem. It's not in a book yet. In Madrid, when the Lord God went belly up, out of business, little brats went shin-kicking through the streets of La Paloma. The watchmaker closed up shop to peel wallpaper off the Vatican. Nietzsche was in my dream, too, in a tedious spat with Anna Mahler. The syphilis was invisible, so he thought, these are my thoughts. Sunny, 100 degrees, frozen daiquiris, I wasn't going to let any sordid affair spill my happiness. Until the Romanian chipped away at the Pieta. He was driven, bipolar, mood disordered. At least they could name him this. As for the dark stuff, blank page after blank page, motives sail by like an afternoon cloudburst. And I don't want to belabor the matador, how spirit he was, or how she came to me in a black dress out of Manet and took me in her mouth, and I'm whispering, dear God, the way we talk in the old rhymed poetry, with a reverence for clarity and a few simple rules of behavior. Don't make me feel we're all drives and cracked hardware, wired wrong. I want to blame someone. I want to paint over the underground where I'm waiting at 3 a.m. for the train. And yes, I'm sure I'm being followed. The last poem is a poem. I read it virtually every reading I give. My best friend, John Misner, died about 9 years ago. And those of you who've lost friends that you love, and it's different to lose friends than family because that loss is in some ways much cleaner, know that it's an irreparable loss. And I want to honor that in this poem. It's called The Soul. The shaft of narrative peers down. The soul's a petrified fleck of partridge this October. Mud spattered. It thinks it's brush. It thinks it's one with the brush. When God aims just below its feathers. It's too late to raise the soul. Some ossified conceit we use to talk about deer as if we were deer. To talk about the sun. As if the cold autumn light mirrored our lover asleep in the tub. Nevertheless, I want to talk about it. Those scarred bodies on the hospital table, their white chalk children used to deface the sidewalk. The deer fed in the gazebo, where the salt lick was barely safe from the fox. And when the wind didn't drag my scent to her, I sat listless, half awake, and watched her hunger surpass her timidity. I should have been changed. I should have been startled into submission by a very white light. I should have shed my misgivings as her tongue made the sticky sound at the lick, and 2 startled animals stared into what St. Francis called a mystery. I should bring her back. The woman, too. The woman who, what, why, words fail me here. I should sanctify the hospital gown as it slides down the tunnel of the CAT scan, to see where the nodules have spread into the thin, pliable tissues we call the innards in animals, because they dwell in scenery. They're setting for the poem. They provide a respite from the subject who's been probed and lacerated, who's been skinned and eaten away by the story, while I'm beguiled by the music the hooves made on the pine floor. I can bring her back, can't I? I'm bringing him back, the hero who was close enough so I could watch what was inside his face hover and scatter. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Ira. That was a beautiful evening. We have more beautiful evenings coming up. If you're a guest here, pick up one of our programs. Tomorrow night, we have the beautiful, wonderful Araceli Skirmai, and I am reading. And Friday night, we have Gerald Stern and Jean Valentine. And Saturday night, we have two fabulous guests, Jim Haba, Peter Cole. So it goes on. Come back, enjoy, and have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much.